Is that Phil Collins in Genesis?
Oh, yeah.
You know, fake nukes Phil weren't like that at all.
Oh, I love Genesis. Sorry, Phil. This is my favorite Phil. All right, everybody. Hello. It's Tuesday, February the 6th, year of our Lord, 2024. My audio server went down just before the show. Don't know why. So we are not going to have the primo audio that we normally have on the podcast. We won't have the leveling unless I level it manually later, but we are broadcasting properly. And we're also broadcasting, of course, on YouTube, FakoTube, Twitter, DLive, and Odyssey. And today is Tuesday, so it's the Lynn or Tell show, where we talk to Lynn or Tell from Baltimore, Maryland. How you doing, Lynn?
It's not really Baltimore. It's Columbia, Maryland. Baltimore's about a half hour up the road.
All right, say that again. I had to turn Phil down.
Well, it's actually Columbia, the area of Columbia, Maryland, which is a half hour south of Baltimore.
Oh, okay. Columbia, Maryland. Okay. Yeah. Is it the same spelling as the District of Columbia?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that the same spelling as the country Columbia?
No. That's spelled with two O's. Columbia. Columbia.
Okay. Right. Columbia. Okay. Right. Well, we're talking.
I guess it's a Spanish spelling.
I don't even know.
Well, it is. The C-O-L-U-M-B-I-A is a Latin or English spelling. The C-O-L-O-M-B-I-A is the Spanish spelling.
All right. Are you keeping up with all the comments and feedback you get on the different shows? So don't forget, we post this show on the blog. We post the show on FakoTube, and we also post the show on BitChute. Are you keeping up with all those comments?
I don't know about BitChute, but certainly anywhere on the Fakeologist site in the blog.
Okay.
You know, I'm looking at that.
Well, if anyone, just fake11.com/BitChute if you want to find our BitChute channel. Right. We just went over 300 subscribers over there. It is a very active community.
Wow. So they're all picking up.
It's been hopping for a while. It's actually working very well. And all the alternative people are over there. So I had to go over there. That's where Fake Nukes Phil lives.
Right.
And Jim Rizzoli lives, and all your favorite Third Reich.
Oh, here
people.
We go. Here we go.
What happened?
Well, I'm over there in BitChute and seeing you're right. You got me here.
Yes. Very good. So spend some time over there because you're going to get comments on tonight's show over there.
Where's the echo coming from?
I don't know.
We got that echo again. Where's it coming from?
I'm getting no echo. Are you sure you don't have
I'm getting you twice.
Okay, you probably have another window open somewhere. Close your other browsers.
No, I opened up BitChute, that's all.
We'll close it, see if that's it. Whatever you just did, undo it.
Wow. It was opening up BitChute.
Okay. So that's what hurt you. Okay. Because it wasn't me. I didn't do it. I got enough technical problems of my own to share with you. I'm not going to share my problems with your technical problems.
Well, I could share a screen. I'm posting a lot in the group. The forum group called Historical Revisionism. That's become a very popular subject.
On the Fakeologist forums?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've
got your screen up now.
Right. That's for Gemma O'Doherty, who is probably aware of the fact that it was an English pope, Adrian IV, who gave Ireland to Henry II of the Plantagenet dynasty and said that it was God's will that Ireland, the entire island, should be awarded to England in 1155.
That's controversial.
Yeah, not at the time, apparently. So, Gemma, I hope you're aware that it was the Catholic Church that gave Ireland to the English for 1155 to 1920, I guess, 1921. That's a long time, Gemma. You could thank the Catholic Church for giving Ireland to the English. Now, Pope Adrian IV himself is an interesting figure. He was the only English pope. And the name Adrian is just a variant pronunciation of Hadrian. In Latin, it would be Adrianus. Do we know who the Emperor Hadrian was? He's one of the most famous of the Roman emperors.
He has a wall.
Yes, his wall. He also put down the Bar Kokhba revolt in Palestine, which is really just about the bloodiest revolt that the Jews launched against Rome. They seized the country and held it for about 2 years until Hadrian himself personally led an army there to put it down. And the resulting war was so bloody that when the Emperor Hadrian, as commander of the troops, in customary fashion, came back to announce the victory to the Roman Senate, he omitted the usual formal statement, "I and the troops are well." He left that out because that's how bloody this war was. The other thing that the Emperor Hadrian is famous for is his lover, his boy lover, Antoninus.
Oh boy.
Who Hadrian was madly in love with and had statues made and put all over the empire. And when Antoninus died in a tragic drowning accident,
mm-hmm.
Hadrian was just disconsolate. For months, he cried. And in every city of the empire, he had statues erected to his dead lover, Antoninus, who I understand was quite beautiful. And many of those statues, we still have them. We still have artifacts and remnants of all. There were so many that were created. So I've always found it intriguing that the papacy used the name Hadrian, Pope Hadrian, clearly after the Roman emperor. There was nobody else that was famous with that name. And this particular Hadrian issued a papal bull that gave Ireland to the English, to Henry II. Founder of the Plantagenet dynasty in England. And I know Gem will be grateful to hear that to her church for having given her country away to the English for like 600, 700, 800 years, I guess. Yeah, for quite a while. So, and I posted a link to that papal bull, to the original document, in case anybody's interested. Now, I have to say, I've been reading articles in the Irish Light, which is Gemma's newspaper, and I have to say it's very well done, format-wise, production values. It's very, I hate to use the word professional because it's kind of been debased in recent years, but it's a very professionally run publication. And I imagine she also issues it in print. So, that's worth looking at. Looks like they do pretty comprehensive coverage of the situation in Ireland and Europe generally. They're very, very anti-vax. So I don't know. I don't want to get into that subject too much. But there are many things that Gemma and I could discuss about the Catholic Church. Or if she likes, we could recite the rosary together or the Paternoster.
Lynn's still talking. Hey there, Lynn. Sorry. Yeah. I the system had to be relaunched there. So there you are. Hello again. Yeah. I left you at Hadrian's wall.
So I got to repeat everything I said already.
Just the last minute.
Well, I was discussing.
Or we could just keep talking.
Yeah. How Ireland was given to the English.
Oh, yeah, we heard all that. We heard that.
Okay.
All right. And PTL over in the Fakeologist FakeoTube forum says, what does Lynn know about the Irish potato famine? I think we've gone through that with other guests in the past. I'm sure Lynn is aware.
Yeah, it was not really a potato famine.
Yeah.
It was an artificially induced famine to starve out the Irish people and get them to leave, mainly to go to America or to Australia.
Yes.
So the English could take over the best land, of course.
Right.
And the British Army actually confiscated.
Yeah, it was a food confiscation. Food.
Yeah, so.
There was no blight on those potatoes.
But those are many of the troops who fought in our Civil War. The two largest immigrant groups that were brought over here.
German.
Were the Germans and the Irish.
Right.
And the Irish were mainly coming here because of poverty and oppression in Ireland. The Germans who came here, strangely enough.
The Bolshevik Germans were fighting for Lincoln.
Well, there were no Bolsheviks then. The Bolsheviks didn't emerge until 1905.
Okay. So the Marxists.
Yes, they were followers of the socialist, the International Working Men's Association and the working class movement in Europe, and especially in Germany at the time, under the leadership of Ferdinand LaSalle and Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. And these Germans were very educated. Many of them were tradesmen. Yeah. Some of them had served in the military. They had to leave Germany because they participated in the democratic revolutions that took place in 1848 across Europe, which were brutally repressed. And so many of these Germans, they had to get out of Germany. They had a price on their head. But they were already very much in sympathy with Lincoln and the North in the Civil War because, of course, they were opposed to slavery. And Germans had been coming here to the United States, and some of them had risen to positions of great prominence. And one of the most, well, one who I posted a link about was General Joseph Wiedermeyer.
Is this in the...
Yeah, it's in the forum.
FakeAllThisForums.com.
Or maybe not. It might be in the blog where we were discussing the Civil War. I responded to... Yeah, it's in the blog where you posted a video by someone who is basically trying to sort of rehabilitate the South and the Confederacy. And I posted,
Right. Yeah, that's by Chris. What's his name? Chris Gaddy. Christopher Gaddy. I believe Jim found that for me. You still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, we can discuss, if historical revisionism is a subject you're interested in, we can discuss the Civil War, what it was really about. I have my own views on it. I've read a lot about it.
I'd like to hear. Did you, first of all, did you listen to Christopher Gaddy?
All of his material, yeah.
You know all of that? You've heard of him before?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, there's all kinds of neo-Confederates out there.
Oh, wow.
There's a whole
okay.
neo-Confederate movement in the South, people who, okay. some of them like dressing up in Confederate uniforms and reenacting Civil War battles, but some of them want to, I suppose, reestablish a Confederacy. I don't know if that would mean legalizing slavery again because of the 13th Amendment, but I don't know what their views on that is.
Okay, so what's your take on Gaddy and his idea? Right.
Yeah, that's what the cause of the Civil War was, etc.
Did it have anything to do with slavery? Or was that
Gaddy.
Just a sideshow, a distraction, a red herring?
Well, yeah, I think it was a red herring. I do.
Okay.
You can read the documents and the speeches and what the Southerners themselves said at the time. Now, it is true, there was an abolitionist movement in the North, but it was by no means in the majority. Most Northerners voted for Lincoln because they did not want to see slavery expanded into the West. That's really what the war was about.
Okay.
And in fact, the Civil War did not really start in April of 1861 with the firing on Fort Sumter. Nor did it begin with the election of Lincoln, which should have occurred a few months earlier. What we call the Civil War really began in a place called Bleeding, Kansas in 1854. There was a compromise negotiated in the Congress called the Missouri Compromise. And then there was the Kansas-Nebraska Act and other legislation. All this legislation was called the Compromise of 1850. And the way it settled the slavery question was this. It said that every territory in the West, when it was ready to qualify to enter the Union as a state, would decide on the question of slavery by means of what was called popular sovereignty. And that meant a vote, a ballot, an election. And so Southerners, especially from Missouri, flocked into Kansas, which was about to be the next state to enter the Union, because I believe California had already entered as a free state, largely due to the efforts of John Fremont, who was the first Republican candidate for president in 1856, and who was opposed to slavery. He was married to Jessie Benton, who was the daughter of a very famous senator from Missouri, Thomas Hart Benton, who also was personally opposed to slavery.
Okay.
And so when Fremont brought California into the Union, it was brought in as a free state, because that's how Californians voted. So what the Southerners were looking at is a situation where these new states coming into the Union would ultimately outnumber the state. The South. They would outvote the South in the Congress, in the Senate. Remember, up to that point, most of our presidents had come from the South. The South had managed to maintain parity, even a majority in the Senate. But these new territories that were entering the Union as states, wherever popular sovereignty ruled that they were going to enter as a free state rather than a slave state, the Southerners knew they were going to be outnumbered sooner or later. They knew it. So their strategy was, in Kansas, to send people in, as many immigrants as they could from Missouri and other states, to vote for slavery. But Northerners, as you would expect, from New England and from New York and Pennsylvania and other places, including John Brown and his sons, they too flocked to Kansas. And that's where the Civil War started in 1854. So Americans were already shooting it out over the question of slavery in Kansas, which came to be called Bleeding Kansas. Of course, Kansas ultimately did enter the Union as a free state because the citizens voted to make it free. The issue of slavery bothered Northerners, especially Northern farmers, because slavery really is an unfair competition against free labor. Slavery drives down the wages of free labor, just as bringing in immigrants right now drives down the wages, right?
Right, yeah.
Right, and creates an environment of cheap labor. And that's what slavery was, unlimited cheap labor. So, of course, the free soilers, as they were called, farmers, tradesmen, mostly from the North, were adamantly opposed to extending slavery. But they weren't about to go to war to free the people that were already slaves in the South. No, they supported Lincoln because they felt that he was suppressing an insurrection and he was preserving the Union. And that's the original reason why Northern they could see that slavery was not going to be extended into the new Western territories. The Southerners had another idea. A group of elite Southern aristocrats, really the leaders in the South, who belonged to a secret society called the Knights of the Golden Circle, envisioned a whole new country, a whole new empire that they called the Golden Circle Empire. The geographic center of this Golden Circle Empire was to be in Havana, Cuba, which they expected to conquer. They also expected to conquer Mexico and transplant cotton farming to Mexico so that Mexico could also become a slave country. That is to say, the Knights of the Golden Circle, and they also wanted to conquer Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador. They envisioned a Golden Circle Empire that would include the original Southern states, a part of South America, the Caribbean, and Mexico. And it was, of course, going to be a slave empire. And one of the leading figures in the Knights of the Golden Circle was, of course, General Albert Pike. Originally a Bostonian, transplanted to the South and the West. And he was deployed by the Confederacy to try and organize the Indian tribes in Arkansas and Oklahoma to support the Confederacy. Those were his main efforts at the outbreak of the war, Albert Pike. So you ask yourself, well, if most Southerners didn't own slaves, why did they go to war? Well, that's pretty simple to explain. All you have to do is read that statement by the in the inaugural address of Alexander Stevens, the first vice president of the Confederacy. What's it called? It's a famous speech he made. I got to look this up. And I posted this in the forum.
Okay.
They gave a name to the speech. Can you find that?
I'm looking. What's it under?
Blog post. Chris, what was his name?
Oh, it's under a blog post or on the forums?
No, it's under a blog post. Well, I don't think it's in the forums. It's in the blog post. Because I responded directly to that subject, the Confederacy.
Oh, Christopher Hattie.
Yeah, Christopher Hattie. Gaddy?
Oh, Gaddy, sorry. I'll look it up here. Latest comments. We can look over here. Latest comments. Yeah, we'll find it.
To cut to the chase, Alexander Stevens made a speech in which he said the foundation of the Confederacy was the obvious inequality between Negroes and whites. It was it's called the Cornerstone Speech. It just dawned on me. It's the Cornerstone Speech.
Okay.
Because he says that the racial inequality between the Negroes and the whites was the cornerstone of the Confederacy. Now, what's going on? And consequently, every minister in the South preached to their congregation that this was God's will, that it violated God's law should blacks become equal to whites. Because remember the problem the South had. Not only did they have a population of slaves, but there was also a population of already free blacks. And if you look at the legal codes in most of these Southern states, many of them required a freed slave to leave the county, to leave the state, to go as far away as possible. Because the Southern ruling class considered the presence of free Negroes to be the greatest threat to maintenance of slavery on these large cotton plantations in the South that they were making all their money from. So the presence of even one free Negro in a town or in a county was a potential threat, especially if that Negro was educated, and especially if that Negro happened to be a preacher. So they had laws forcing them to move when they were freed. And these ministers got up in their pulpits and they preached that this was God's will and that it would be a horrible sin for blacks ever to be equal to whites. And that is why those Southern boys went and enlisted, because the minister told them to. Conversely, in the North, most of the ministers were abolitionists. They were opposed to slavery. And they preached exactly the opposite. They preached the equality of all, because we were all the children of God. And that's why slavery ultimately became the issue. Basically, after the Battle of Antietam, became the dominant issue, as opposed to simply preserving the Union. That was also to win support in Europe, because European intervention was absolutely critical to the progress of the Civil War. The South knew that. The South was banking on European intervention. They got the French to invade and occupy Mexico under Napoleon III, Louis Bonaparte, who was sympathetic to the South. And they had a bit of support in the British ruling class that wanted to bust up the United States. And of course, the British were buying Southern cotton. So a big part of the war was for the Southern cotton growers, plantation owners, to break the Northern blockade and get their cotton to England. And of course, the British Navy, much, much larger and more powerful than our Navy, help them do it in many cases. And in a sense, there was sort of a civil war for public opinion in England between the pro-slavery and the anti-slavery people. Remember, England had banned slavery with the Wilberforce Bill, And technically, the British Navy was abolishing the international slave trade. They were hanging slave traders, mostly in the Indian Ocean, but also in the Atlantic. So the British really enforced the abolition of the slave trade, of the international slave trade. But as I say, British elite public opinion was somewhat divided because they saw an opportunity to break up the United States and reassert their influence. The counterweight to the British Navy was, guess who? The Russian Navy. The
Russians, yeah.
Right. And the Tsar, Alexander III, I think, Alexander II, Alexander III, he had already issued a decree abolishing serfdom in Russia. And he very much identified with, he corresponded with Abraham Lincoln, and he very much supported the abolition of slavery in the United States. And so the Russian Navy jumped in as a counterweight to the British Navy. And there's a whole narrative surrounding that. It was decisive, really, because the Russian Navy managed to drive off the British Navy in some cases, thus allowing the Northern Navy to maintain the blockade against the South. And of course, by that time, Admiral David Farragut had occupied New Orleans, which is the mouth of the Mississippi. Ulysses S. Grant was pursuing his strategy of basically taking over the Mississippi so that the South would not be able to transport supplies up and down the river. And as things evolved, it did become a struggle against slavery. Now, one of the best examples of the way in which the churches and the ministers recruited these young men to go fight in both the North and the South is the case of the Southern Baptist Convention. Did you ever wonder why it's called the Southern Baptist Convention?
No, why?
Well, once upon a time, there was the American Baptist Missionary Society, and there were a lot of Baptists in the United States. Yeah. Remember, Americans were very, very pious, religious, church-going people. I mean, the minister's sermon could send you off to war, as happened to be the case. The American Baptist Missionary Society, around about the 1830s, decided that it really didn't look good to have slave traders as members of their missionary society. So they prohibited any slave traders from being Baptist missionaries. And at that point, the Southerners said, we're splitting. And they formed the Southern Baptist Convention, which was pro-slavery and totally racist. Preached that God had decreed that the Negro was born to be the servant, the maid servant, and the hand servant, and the slave of the white man, because God had ordained the white man to rule over the Negro. And this was preached in every pulpit in the South. And so if you want to know why all these dirt poor Southerners enlisted in the Confederacy to fight, it's because their minister in the church told them. And you can read these sermons. You can go out and read these sermons. You can read what was published in the newspapers in the South. No, Southerners did not fight to defend slavery. They fought to defend the superiority of the white race. And that's a fact. So I don't want to go on and on about this. But people who don't understand the role that race played in the Civil War, and the role of the Western territories, which is really what it was all about, whether slavery was going to be expanded into the Western territories. Because if it wasn't, that meant sooner or later, slavery in the South would be rendered obsolete. And that's what these Southern plantation owners were afraid of. The poor Southerners were afraid that all these blacks would be free and they'd have to share political and legal equality with these inferior slaves. Former slaves. So anyway, not to beat it to death. From the Southern point of view, it was fought over race. From the Northern point of view, it was fought to preserve the Union. As things progressed, and especially after the Battle of Antietam, Lincoln decided to seal the deal with European public opinion. He was waiting for a major battlefield victory. Antietam was not really a decisive victory, but Lee's invasion of the North was stopped there at Antietam, which, by the way, they claim in a single day was the bloodiest battle of the entire war in one day at Antietam. Gettysburg, I think, in 3 days had the maximum casualties for the war. So we're told. So, yeah, Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation after Antietam, 1862, because that was a strategic moment in which to enlist the support of European public opinion, because most ordinary Europeans were opposed to slavery. It was only certain elite elements in France and England that were sympathetic to the South. So anyway, that's all I have to say about that. For now, if people want to argue about it, we can argue about it.
No, I don't think so.
Right. All I'll have to do is pull out the speeches and the sermons, and especially Alexander Stevens' cornerstone speech, as it came to be known. You know, his inaugural address at the birth of the Confederacy, that the cornerstone of the Confederacy was the inferiority of the Negro race. There it is. So why don't we move on to more contemporary issues, huh?
Yeah, I was going to talk about immigration here. I'm looking for a post. I might have put it on shorts.fakeologist.com. Oh, here it is. Jim Rizzoli was talking a lot about immigration. That's really how he got his start, is trying to put a stop to what was illegal by federal laws, the immigration into Framingham, Massachusetts, where he lives, by Brazilians 20 years ago.
Yeah, and laws don't mean anything in America.
Well, that's what he found out. So that's how Jim and Joe got into it. And Joe just died this week, so Jim is a little broken up because it's his identical twin. But he's really been hot on the immigration topic because that's how he got into the whole who's ruling over us idea. And,
well, we pointed out last week, didn't we, that they're estimating that they're going to run out of workers to subsidize Social Security.
I think so. I think that's the biggest point.
But are you going to be able to keep it? I doubt it.
So here he is just talking about
these immigrants. They're going to be armed, eventually, and dangerous. And they're going to be able to walk right up to your house and kill you. That's what you're going to be afraid of.
So Jim is talking about is he thinks that
to Georgia.
He just thinks that the immigrants are dangerous, and this is the largest transfer of wealth from generation to generation coming up. But he just thinks that people are not going to be able to keep their money for many, many reasons. And he thinks the immigrants that are coming in, he thinks there's 50 million illegal immigrants.
He thinks
they're going to be very dangerous to the people that are already here that have accumulated wealth.
The meme that's spreading is military-aged males. That's the expression they're using.
Yes. That's a bit of a trigger phrase, by the way.
This event up in New York City plays right into that scenario, doesn't it?
Well, maybe it's on purpose. Maybe I don't know anything about it. But what he was also saying is he thinks that these military-aged people are going to go right into the military and do the things against Americans that regular Native Americans wouldn't do to fellow Americans to enforce the new biosecurity laws. So
they would already be doing that if they became cops. They could become cops and do that.
Well, he thinks it's going to become even bigger than that. And I think if you're an immigrant, you can, obviously you get paid being in the military, and then there are further benefits.
Yeah. So what he's envisioning is a civil war.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where the immigrants, well, there was a movie that came out in 1996-97 called It was called The Second American Civil War.
Okay, let's look that up.
Starring Bo Bridges, had some other big names in it.
Okay, so this is not a new idea, not a new concept.
No, and it's over immigration. The Civil War is basically fought over immigration. Do they have a synopsis there you might want to read?
Second Civil War is a satirical black comedy film made for HBO and first shown on March 15th, 1997. Oops, is this the same one?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, this is it?
Yeah, that's
right. The film stars James Earl Jones, Elizabeth Pena, and Dennis Leary as reporters for a CNN-like cable news network, Newsnet, and Beau Bridges as the governor of Idaho, Phil Hartman as the United States president. Isn't he always the president in movies and skits and whatnot?
Maybe.
James Coburn as the... Okay. And the plot of the film is set in a future United States in which immigration has rapidly increased, resulting in a fractured polyglot society. The mayor of Los Angeles speaks only in Spanish. Makes sense. Rhode Island is populated mostly by Chinese Americans. And Alabama has a Sikh congressman. Okay. Oh, that's really upside down world. Politics have been openly reduced to a matter of catering to various ethnic groups for their votes, and media-fueled polarization has led to widespread anxiety with viewership of cable news, including channel Newsnet, at all-time highs. And this is 97, so were they really thinking of the internet back then? I know it was just getting going, but I wonder...
Probably not as much as well, not social media. I don't know if they anticipated social media.
So did you watch this movie and do you recommend?
Yes, I did. And the most memorable scene in the movie
was very interesting.
You know, there were clips in the movie where a lot of it is CNN style news reports, right?
Yes.
That's how the narrative advances.
They call it NN News Network.
Okay. Right. And one of the stories that slips out is, I'm here in San Antonio, Texas, where a crowd has just dynamited the Alamo.
Okay.
So okay. A crowd of Mexicans in Texas dynamited the Alamo in this movie. They finally got back. They finally got even.
All right, because that's where they routed the Mexicans.
Yeah, right. They stole Texas from Mexico, of course. And then they proceeded to steal California, Arizona, New Mexico.
Well, they already own it now. They don't really need to steal it, do they, Lynn?
Well, remember, those areas were originally conquered by the Spanish.
Yeah, they were. That was Mexico.
Yeah, it was all Mexico. Mexico was huge, huge. Yeah. And, you know, the United States basically took these territories away from Mexico through pure aggression.
Yeah.
The best one to read on that is the memoirs of General Ulysses S. Grant. He really was a military genius.
Okay.
He fought in that war, as did most of the senior officers on both the North and the South. They were all veterans of the Mexican War. And what Grant says in his memoirs is that this war was the most unjust in history. He basically says in so many words that the United States provoked it using false flag tactics and other things and essentially bullied Mexico and defeated them militarily, bullied Mexico into this war. And like I say, Grant calls it one of the most unjust war in history. So he didn't have a very high opinion of it. Remember that a lot of Northerners were opposed to going to war with Mexico in 1848. The Southerners wanted these new territories to expand slavery so they could get more votes in the Congress on the pro-slavery side. So that's why Southerners were really hot to invade Mexico, you know, to go to war with Mexico. But a lot of Northerners and Westerners were opposed to the war, and this included Abraham Lincoln. And at the time, he was probably still a Whig, member of the Whig Party, and a follower of Henry Clay. And the Whigs were more Federalists. They were the successor to the Federalist Party, which died out in the early part of the century. And the Democrats, of course, were dominant in the South, although there were Southern Whigs as well. They tended to be pro-slavery. But many New Englanders refused to supply troops for the war against Mexico. Many refused to pay taxes. Henry David Thoreau went to jail for refusing to pay federal taxes to support the war against Mexico. And Lincoln himself, as a young congressman, opposed the war and spoke out against it. Mm. But the United States still went to war with Mexico, 1846 to 1848. Beat the Mexicans, I think, pretty soundly. Occupied Mexico City. This would be Zachary Taylor, who later became president, and Winfield Scott, two big generals there. And these new territories came into the Union. They became part of, as the settlement of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, I think it was called, that settled the war. And the Mexicans lost all those territories. I think the entry of California into the Union as a free state, probably not too long after the gold, right around the time of the alleged gold rush, which was another hoax, to get settlers to move out there.
Oh, is that right? Interesting.
Yeah, I think the entry of
gold rush was a hoax.
Yeah, the gold rush was a hoax, of course. Yeah.
Wow. Beautiful.
I think the entry of California in particular, and that, and I guess Nebraska came into the Union. The Southerners could see that it was only within another generation they would be completely outnumbered in the Congress. And that would be the beginning of the end for their way of life, as they saw it. So they really were already agitating for secession long before the war itself broke out in Kansas in 1854. So there's plenty of history available on this, you know. I mean, the United States had all kinds of newspapers, and, you know, you can read the newspaper articles of the period, and you can read the text of the Lincoln-Douglas debates that got into this pretty heavily. This question of whether these new territories in the West were going to be slave or free. That was really what people were arguing about. In the beginning, no one had any intention of freeing the Southern slaves. That wasn't the point. The point was that slavery didn't belong in these new Western territories, that they needed to be settled with free people, free farmers, free tradesmen, who would not have to compete against slave labor. That's really what it was about.
Interesting. Okay. So do you recommend the Second Civil War as a movie to watch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because... Yes. Because... in the end, they show, I guess, Idaho National Guard troops shooting it out with the United States Army troops. You know, that's how the film ends. It really does become a bloody civil war, apparently. But yeah, because this idea of the United States is these enclaves, like, for example, that Rhode Island ends up having a Chinese majority or something. Chinese American and Asian American majority, and they don't want. I think that the immediate issue is some refugees that they're trying to resettle. The governor of Idaho says, we don't want them here. We can't handle this. All these different states are saying, we don't want to be overwhelmed by these immigrants that you're bringing in. It's exactly like what we're going through right now. It really is. It makes you think this was scripted. It really does.
Well, you were bringing up a story in New York. So do you want to? Oops, my screen.
Well, yeah, everybody, anybody who pays any attention to mainstream media has heard about this. But apparently, sometime last week, some New York City cops were—they may have been. I don't know what the circumstances were, but apparently, they had an encounter with several of these illegals that are living in New York, the migrants, as they're called, that have been put up in New York City in hotels by Eric Adams, the mayor. And these migrants ganged up on these two New York City cops and really beat them pretty badly, sending them both to the hospital. The migrants who were involved, at least two of them, I think, were arrested. Turned out they had previous arrest records. And then they were released. I'm going to say that again. The city of New York arrested them, and then released them. And they promptly, I guess, took a flight out to California. And Eric Adams, the mayor, and the district attorney there, Suggs or Skaggs or Scuggs, what's his name? Alvin Bragg.
Okay.
Alvin Bragg, is that his name? The same one who indicted Trump, Alvin Bragg. Yeah, he's the DA who released these migrants with criminal records. Right, right. The standard operating procedure should have been they criminally charged with assault. And then the city of New York should have called ICE, right? Yeah. Immigration Customs Enforcement. And said, you know, these guys are going to do their time and then they're going to be deported. That would be the standard operating procedure. But you know, they just let them go without any bail. And then Bragg, Alvin Bragg, when the press asks him about it, he reads this prepared statement, basically crying crocodile tears over this incident that occurred and saying, this is terrible and we should never allow that. Well, if that's the case, why the hell did you release these guys with no bail?
Right.
So apparently they showed up in California for a couple photo ops. They're like sticking their middle finger in the camera to show their contempt for all the rest of us, I guess. And they're laughing about it. They're laughing about it. There's a video of these guys showing up in California. The media found them. It's holding a microphone in front of them. And they're saying, I no speak English, no speak English. But they're laughing. They're laughing. So are they crisis actors who were hired to do this? Why? Why would the district attorney of New York City and the mayor play into this narrative? Does it make any sense to you?
Well, they have to do a lot of things they don't want to do. So I don't know the story, so I can't really comment. Let me try and bring it up here on the page here. Like at
so
least
you hadn't even heard about this until I brought it up, right?
No, I have not.
This is not good. This is not good.
Well, I'm in Canada here, and I'm not really.
Right, kidding. You're in Canada, right? They don't fight over illegal migrants in Canada, right?
Well, not really. You guys are the ones that are getting the bus loads going all around. This is to bring down America anyway. So Canada's already full immigration stock lock and barrel here. So here we go here. So this was at Times Square.
Right. Times Square, the Big Apple, right in the middle of everything. Must have been in front of a crowd, too.
Let's see if this shows it here. Very fuzzy wuzzy here. Let me just show on my screen here. Very fuzzy. Let's go back. So the cops were pounded.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hear one of the cops suffered facial fractures.
Everyone's wearing a mask. Very hard to see video.
They're all wearing a mask. There you go. Kicking them while they're down. Oh,
I don't know. I don't know if any kicks made contact.
Nah, I don't know about that. They're not done yet.
This looks like a bad video game in terms of quality, but okay.
You're right, it does. Ooh. I don't know.
I don't know, Lynn. This looks real. Here we go again. The video cameras.
It's alive!
Video cameras are so good today, and we have to deal with this terrible quality stuff.
It does make you suspicious, huh?
Oh, yeah. They hopped on a bus.
Right.
Freed without bail. Okay, yeah.
So, in the chat room, someone's already suggesting that this looks like sounds like a psyop.
Yeah.
To rile up the natives against the immigrants. Apparently, the same thing's going on in the UK.
Yeah.
And probably in Ireland, in Germany, everywhere else where immigration is, these unwanted immigrants are an issue, sure. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they staged it for that purpose. But imagine being the district attorney of the city of New York or the mayor and letting these guys go. It's crazy, right?
It is. It's crazy. But that's part of the narrative, too, is just to just step down when there's any kind of crime.
So Alvin Bragg and Eric Adams are going to take a hit for the team. Is that it? They're going to take a dive for the team.
They're just actors, so they're told what to do and say. I mean, there's a lot of money on the line.
Eric Adams, apparently, a lot of New Yorkers who I run into online aren't aware of the fact that Eric Adams held a Masonic initiation ceremony at Gracie Mansion, which is the, you know, sort of like the city hall there in New York.
Yes.
Where he was inducted into, I guess, the Prince Hall, maybe a Prince Hall lodge, but basically a fairly high level Freemasonic ceremony that he was very proud of. That was also reported in the New York Post.
You know, these guys, I mean, they got impossible jobs, honestly. Man, now.
Well, he's a Freemason, so that tells you who he answers to.
Look at this team. Look at my deputy mayors. First deputy mayor, Sheena Wright. Deputy Mayor, stand up. They need to see you. Deputy Mayor Williams Isom, Deputy Mayor Mira Josie, Deputy Mayor Amazar, Deputy Mayor Maria Torres Springer. Have you ever seen this much chocolate leading the city of New York?
That's his boat.
You talk about race baiting. These guys are the worst.
Yeah.
They make a big deal out of it.
Look who's here. This is representative of the city. That's why people are hating on me.
Oh, of course. Here we go.
You trying to figure out why they're hating on me? They're hating on me because how many of you go to church? Ma'am, this is a Matthew 21 and 12 moment. Jesus walked in the temple. He saw them doing wrong in the temple. He did what?
He turned the table Came over. Over.
I went to City Hall to turn the table over.
What a piece of shit this guy
is.
Oh,
that's really going to get
what a real piece of shit
the church
guy
people
is.
Worked up. Hey, it's all that. These guys are really, they're something else.
I got no sympathy for New York City. New York City is 9/11 town, and it will always be 9/11 town to me.
Yeah.
A city of liars, cowards, and traitors to their country. 9/11 proved that. So whatever happens here now, it's just icing on the cake.
It's Gotham.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Gotham. Yeah, I don't really care about it either.
So hey, move the immigrants in. Why not? Let's dump them. Let's dump them by the busload into New York City. Let's do it. Why not?
I forgot. I'm using the Chrome browser. That's why usually I use Brave, but the Chrome browser is so full of ads. This is what's causing me all the trouble. I got to get look at the ads on this page here. Wow. I might have to switch back to the Brave browser for the show, but I wanted to have two browsers going just so I could, if one crashed, it would crash the whole show. But yeah, my Chrome has been crashing tonight. So that's why the show is so full of interruptions. Sorry about that. That's because I think I accidentally pressed something on one of the sites that started taking over my right click button. So, sorry about that, guys. Technical trouble here. But anyway, well, we've been doing about an hour. Do you want to, if anyone wants to call in and say hi to Lynn, you can. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up?
Let me see. I want to read some of these quotes here. Here we go.
Fox News.
NYPD releases migrant raid photos as soft on crime city leaders face national outrage. So this is Fox News.
You want to share that screen? I usually don't look at mainstream news, but okay.
Let's see if I can share it.
What do you think of this Mayorkas guy? Looks just like Jeff Bezos. He's supposed to be Cubish, a Cuban Jew.
He's a stooge.
They call that Cubish. That's what Peggy was saying. Peggy Hall. You watch Peggy Hall? She's been doing quite well these days, talking about these kinds of things. Here's Peggy Hall here.
.org. You are not going to believe my continuing coverage on all of the corruption.
So she's talking about
immigration. Find it difficult to get from South America through Central America. Here's a larger map. So here's Colombia. Here's the Darien Gap. Basically through the jungle.
I really enjoyed this geography lesson, I have to admit. I never heard of the Darien Gap before, so this is very instructive. But Peggy Hall. So I put this, I have another sub blog where I use it as a Twitter. It's shorts.fakeologist.com. You can sign up and get the email notifications here, shorts.fakeologist.com, or you can subscribe to it on an RSS feed as well. And just to let you know, if I'm also on Twitter, but I'm also on Mastodon. So if you type fake11.com, now fake11.com is my URL shortener. That's my keyword URL. So if you type in Mastodon, Mastodon, you can follow me on Mastodon. I am fakeologist@noauthority.social. So if you type in that, you should get to my Mastodon page. I used to have my own Mastodon server, but nobody used it, so I deleted it. But I figure I've got enough places for you to participate in. The main one I want everyone to participate in is the Fakeologist forums. And I think the spam bots have found the forums, and they're spamming me to death for registration. So right now, registration, it is open, but I'm getting attacked by the bot. So I might have to close it and just do manual activation again. So if you register, make sure you send me an email as well. I'm at fakeologist.com, just to let me know. Or if you want me to register you manually, just send me an email at ima@fakeologist.com or register@fakeologist.com, and I'll register you on the forums and on the blog manually. So if you want to do that, please consider doing that, because I might have to close off the automatic or the self-registration, because I'm just getting whacked. I don't know how these bots get by the questions. I change the questions, and I change the countermeasures, but they failed immediately. So who knows? Who knows what's going on? But anyway,
I wanted to put this link to Fox News in the
private
chat, but I can't seem to get a line in the chat.
No, you got to go in a private chat. I don't think you can type directly into the chat yourself. I don't think so. So okay. Give it to me in the private chat, or put it on your share screen and just bring it up yourself. That's the easiest way.
Well, share screen doesn't work the way I thought it did.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay,
does it got to be in the same browser?
Not really. You can have a separate browser, but you have to share another window. So if you want to share another browser, yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Just put it in the private chat, and I'll click it for you.
Well, that's not so easy to do either.
Just click on the word private chat. And that'll bring it up, and then you can type a message in there.
Let's see. How do I find the word private chat when it doesn't show up here?
Oh, are you in the Restream studio?
Yeah.
Well, it should be on the bottom somewhere.
On the bottom.
Right. It's on the bottom underneath your bubbles. And
no, it's not. It's not.
All right.
Let me zoom out and get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Well, just maximize the window. Buzzing Fret says, I love the disdain that Lynn has for actor Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, I can't stand him.
Okay.
Why not? Ever since Close Encounters of a Third Kind, where they staged a train derailment and a chemical spill to panic people and clear them out of the county so they could land an extraterrestrial vessel, you know. But he was really annoying in that movie. So
all right, yeah. So I got the Mastodon server up. So if you want to follow me on Mastodon, it's fake11.com/Mastodon. Are you on Mastodon by any chance, Lynn?
No.
I tell you, there's so many websites. I don't know how anyone can keep track. You could spend your whole life.
Yeah, I can't figure this out. I'm watching the chat, but there's no private. I'm looking for the words private chat. Where?
Well, let me just type. I'll send you a test. I don't know if it brings it up, but I sent you a test there. And don't worry about it.
They don't. This is
technology.
This sucks. It really does.
Well, just tell me the website and I'll go to it.
What does this word leave mean on the bottom right hand side?
I don't see the word league.
LEAVE on an orange key.
Oh,
I'm afraid to hit it.
Yeah, I know that would leave the studio. Don't leave that.
Right. The menu has presentation, extra camera, share screen, local video. The menu has nothing about private chat in it. Nothing.
I don't know. I don't know where you are.
It's really bad. It really is.
I don't know where you are.
It's so poorly designed. It really is. All right, okay, here we go. Fakeologist test.
Yeah, that's me in the private chat.
Right, but
so you can click on
here we go. Finally I can type a message.
You can type the message to me. Just put the link in there and I'll bring it up for you.
All right, here you go.
All right. So let me just go into the browser and then click this. It should come in. I click on that, it'll bring it over here. And we will share this. I got all these damn.
We're here for pattern 156. Essentially, it's about 62 cases right now. Seven bars.
What's this going on?
Well, this is what's going on in New York because of this, the problem that they're having with the migrants. Apparently, they caught a bunch of Venezuelans running a theft ring, and it's just very bad.
Right. And there's our buddy.
Yeah, Eric.
In police uniform.
Yeah. Those who think they're going to come to our country, break our laws, assault our cops. That was not only an assault on an individual, that was an assault on our system of public safety. Adams said on video in a follow-up post.
All for what? Hey, is this happening in Baltimore? Are you guys getting your bus loads there?
I haven't heard anything about that in Baltimore, but believe me, Baltimore is a disaster area right now. Carjacking is like through the roof, really.
So live shootings, carjacking?
Carjackings and shootings, yeah.
So carjacking is when the person's in their car and they get yanked out.
Right, carjacking. Also car theft.
Well, car theft is off the charts because it's so easy copying a key. It's a radio signal to open the car and get it going. That's happening.
Well, they're using tow trucks.
Oh,
they've hijacked some tow trucks and they're using tow trucks to steal high value vehicles. So
they just tow them away. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay.
And they say that these are like 14 year old kids who have been hired to do this. That's who they're busting in Baltimore.
Yeah, but that's because they can't be.
Right. They're juveniles. They're juveniles. So they.
The same everywhere.
Yeah.
Same everywhere.
There's the guy. Giving the finger to the camera, I guess, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Why? Imagine that. Why would you even want to be on camera if you're here illegally? And especially if you had a felony record. The whole thing is like, it's crazy.
It is. It is crazy. Well, here's the blog here. It's fakeologist.blog, fakeologist.com/blog. We've got a lot of stuff on here. Make sure you go over here and check it out. Did you hear about Tower 22?
Yeah, we're still not even sure that this actually happened, that these three soldiers were actually killed.
Even the No Agenda show is calling it a hoax. They never call it, but this one is just so bad and so obvious.
Right.
A lot of these people think that this is all going to end if Trump comes back. I don't think the psyops ended when Trump was in office. I think there were psyops and hoaxes and drills. So,
oh yeah, I remember that the El Paso Walmart shooting.
Right,
Trump went down there and he actually shook hands and did a photo op with this soldier who allegedly claimed he played a heroic role during the thing, and then it turned out he was lying. And then they said that the soldier committed suicide.
Yeah. So by the way, let me remind people, we got a lot of YouTubers in the chat tonight. Now, if you guys don't use your website for video streaming, if you wanted to do the Fakeologist a favor, you could send me your keys to the live stream. Everyone has a set of car keys or video keys to stream live. So if you want me to add your channel to stream live on, just send me your keys. Send me an email at keys@fakeologist.com. And I can add your channel to Restream. So I wouldn't mind if at least one person tried that. I think Tim Osmond does that because when he loses his YouTube stream channels, he'll stream to a backup set of keys. So yeah. If you guys want to try that, let me know. Just find your keys. If you don't know how to do it, just look it up, do a search, and share your keys with me. That's if you don't mind losing, if you're getting a strike. Now, the first strike doesn't make much difference, but if you have your own content, then don't do it. But if you don't have content and you just have an account, you're not going to lose your account. You'll just lose your streaming abilities if it gets struck down. But your account will stay. So that's it. I just want to let people know. And I got one complaint about someone who says, The theme music at the end makes them crazy. This theme music here. I don't know what the problem is. I think it's pretty good. But if you have better closing out theme music, let me know.
If you could share that last screen that I'm sharing right now.
All right.
The socialist origins of the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay. I'll take the chat out of the way so people can see it. And the caption out of the way. So what do we got here? You want to read it?
125 years ago, a former minister turned advertiser published an oath that would become a hallmark of American schooling. Francis Bellamy, who, by the way, his brother August Bellamy was a popular novelist. Francis Bellamy wrote the Pledge of Allegiance partly as a marketing scheme. The Youth's Companion, one of the first weekly magazines in the nation to target both adults and their children, hired Bellamy to develop promotional strategies for commemorating and profiting from the 400th anniversary of Columbus's voyage to America. That would have been, I guess, the sesquicentennial. Bellamy was an odd choice for the job, an outspoken supporter of working man's rights. Bellamy was vice president of Boston's Society of Christian Socialists. Society of Christian Socialists. And an avid participant in the social gospel movement, which is sort of the equivalent of what today is called liberation theology. It's left-wing evangelism.
Okay. I've heard this. Was this on the No Agenda show? I think I heard this story.
Oh, really? Have they ever talked about this? But you know,
somebody said that it was an advertising slogan thing. Yeah, I've heard this. This is not news to me, and I just recently heard this. So I was just wondering where I heard it. Maybe I heard it on that podcast with what's his name again about the Civil War? What's his name? Christopher Daddy?
The Pledge of Allegiance is so un-American. It really is.
Mm.
Loyalty oaths are totally un-American. They really are. You were supposed to have allegiance to the state you were born, to the state you resided in, you know. That's right. Where your primary allegiance is supposed to be, not to the federal government. But they rev this up in advance of our entry into World War I, and I'm sure Woodrow Wilson and his administration and all the progressives are really gung-ho for this Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
Totally new idea. Totally un-American idea. But now it's become a way of, I guess, do the public schools still have a Pledge of Allegiance? We had them every morning when I was growing up in school.
The national anthem? Did they sing? Did they play that?
No. We were not. No.
So they didn't play the national anthem, but they did the Pledge of Allegiance.
Well, if you went to an assembly, you might sing America the Beautiful or
okay,
My Country 'Tis of Thee, you know.
But never the national anthem.
Not in class every morning. We had school prayer for a while. We had school prayer up until the seventh grade. Usually there was school prayer and there was the Pledge of Allegiance.
Interesting.
Yeah. And by the time I was in eighth, ninth grade, people were already starting to protest the Vietnam War. And so me and my contemporaries, we sat silently during the Pledge of Allegiance. We refused to stand up and recite the Pledge of Allegiance because of our opposition to the Vietnam War. And in the beginning, we were disciplined for this. But after a while, so many people started doing it. So many students started doing it, they really couldn't stop it. And so by the time I was in my junior year of high school, they'd recite the Pledge of Allegiance over the intercom, and half the class would remain seated and silent. They wouldn't say it in protest.
Nice. All right, you were in the protest generation.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to remember that now, considering it's become Generation Sellout.
Generation Sellout.
Oh, yeah, the boomers are Generation Sellout for sure. The generation that was supposed to question authority. And now it sucks up to authority.
Exactly. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We have quite a few listeners on the audio stream. When this stream cuts out, you're going to hear replays from a couple weeks or a month ago. So I have to get the audio server back on. I might not be able to do that tonight because I'm tired. But I see we got people in the United Kingdom, Colorado, Australia, Romania. Who's in Romania here?
Romania is right next door to Bulgaria, and that's where John Laban is.
That's true, but he's never tuned. I never see Bulgaria on here. We got Lisbon. That's Armand, probably. Brooklyn, New York. Hawkesbury, Ontario, Australia, and a couple more United Kingdoms. So thanks, everyone, on the audio stream for listening in.
And hey, Brooklyn, New York, watch out for those tunnels.
You're right. Maybe it's someone's from a tunnel right now.
Yeah, that's... don't let any of those Hasidim grab you and pull you into their tunnel.
Bulgaria, Boris Negrarossa is Negrarossa. In Bulgaria.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Black Rose.
Wow. Thank you, Bulgaria, for tuning in. And we didn't talk a lot about fake media tonight. Tomorrow is Wednesday. That's Fake Nukes Phil. He'll give you all the fake.
Yeah, Thanks. I've been posting all his stuff out of Gaza in Facebook and other places.
Oh,
just to annoy people.
And you haven't been banned?
Not yet.
Oh, you're not doing yet. Well over there.
Hey, Phil, I'm posting your stuff all over Facebook. Every time one of your things comes out from BitChute, I'm putting the link on Facebook. So, and they haven't banned me yet.
Nice. I'm not on Facebook really anymore, so don't try and find me on Facebook. But I'm everywhere else in the Fakeologist Network. And Lynn will be on BitChute now that she knows her show's on BitChute. So
yeah,
you'll get some replies in there. So
yeah, BitChute's always good for a discussion.
Oh, yeah. They tear you apart.
Yeah.
They tear you apart.
Yeah, we probably got some National Socialists out there.
Oh, you think? Just a few, huh?
Hey, I'm for recruiting everybody.
Yeah, let's not
discriminate. Everybody on our side. I do.
We're not discriminating at all.
No.
Oh, did you do the show with Jenna last week?
No. I did a show with Ingrid, her name is.
Okay.
Ingrid.
Well, post a link to it on the forums. I don't even know. I don't even see or hear it.
Okay. It was on RBN. Yeah. We went through the COVID timeline.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
But we also talked about baby boomer history, the Kennedy assassination, and all that stuff. So,
well, drop a link.
All right.
Drop a link.
I'll do that.
Put it in the forum somewhere. Recommended listening. I think on the forums there's something about, where is it? I don't know. You can put it somewhere. Just put it anywhere.
Yeah.
But you'll figure out a place on the forums. All right, Lynn. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. And, thanks, everyone, for joining in. Don't forget, value for value, fakeologist.com/donate. Thanks, everyone, for coming by, and we'll talk to you next time. Good night. Bye-bye.